Hi, I'm Claire Clotty, and I'm back this week with another episode of American Dreamers, which is an Aura Studios original production. I'm still attempting to find out whether the grass is greener in the UK or the US. Through ongoing, insightful and honest conversations with Black Brits, Black Americans and their families, with lived experiences in both places, I'm asking them and you to decide whether life is better for Black people in the US or the UK. My guest on this episode lives in Milton Keynes, hashtag not everyday London people, and is a pharmaceutical project manager, diversity and inclusion advocate, mother, wife, and expat lifestyle blogger who has traveled to over 30 countries. Welcome, Shireen. How are you doing?
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. What a nice introduction.
Well, it's real, isn't it? You are busy. You clearly like doing lots of different things. Where does that come from?
I feel like it's not busy by choice. It's just that I have a lot of things I'm passionate about and I don't know how to prioritize or pick one. So I just try to do them all.
You have done a lot and you have moved a bit. Whilst you've visited 30 different countries, you've actually lived in different places. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, so I was actually born and raised in Jamaica and I moved to the US around 17 years old. In the US, I lived in New Jersey and Pennsylvania in the Philadelphia area. And then at some point I decided, hey, why not move to the UK? Then I just picked up and moved to Brentwood, Essex. And then now I'm in Milton Keynes.
Okay. So do you remember what it was like when you arrived in the US from Jamaica?
Oh my God. So we always visited the US. So I became a US resident as a child, I think around the age of 10. But my parents still wanted me to get an education in Jamaica. And I guess they just weren't ready to move yet. So we always visited. We had family. To be honest, as a child, I kind of knew I didn't want to move there.
Really?
Yeah, there was something about Jamaica that I love nature and I love the simplicity of living on an island and just going to the beach and going to open markets. And, you know, when we visited the US, it was always a bit more, maybe more commercialized. So we'd more hang out in the malls and everywhere you had to drive and you leave your community and you're immediately on a highway. And I just didn't like, it just felt too busy.
Yeah.
And as a child, I wasn't looking forward to switching from that like simple lifestyle where I would walk everywhere and see my friends and just have that independence to just be outdoors all the time, to move into America where you'd suddenly have to be dependent on parents and people to drive you around. And yeah, so I wasn't looking forward to the move, but my parents decided it was time to go. So we had to go.
I know exactly what you're talking about. If there's one thing that I do miss about the UK is that freedom of movement on your own, that independence. Until I got a car the other day, and listen, let's talk about driving in a minute because that's a whole different story. I was getting angsty about the fact that I couldn't just get out on my own. Yes. I had to wait for my husband to come home to drive me anywhere, or it was an Uber thing because there's hardly any regular buses or trains. Like there were wayfinding places. So whilst you say that you liked walking around in nature and stuff in Jamaica, in the US, there are so many different states. Talk to me about the differences in the places that you've lived, New Jersey, Philadelphia.
So I found that even listening to your the last guest you had on your podcast, and they talk about the different states and how some states are, you know, you can have different ranges, mountains or cities, some are warm, some are hot, different climates. For some reason, moving to the US, you kind of, or I didn't really experience that. Like you move to New Jersey and you kind of just stay on that East Coast and you just have that same climate and the same landscape, I guess. Living on an island in Jamaica, that wasn't my experience. There are mountains and beaches. And every morning I would walk outside my house and go on a balcony and see like the blue mountains and the clouds above the mountains. I missed that in the US. Like where we lived in New Jersey, it was just flat. It was suburbs. It reminded me of Edward Scissorhands where every house looked the same. And you walk outside and it's just like the house next door to you looks identical to yours. And there's just trees and there's no mountains, no change of landscape. It was very different. And now living in the UK, I find that I get to experience those different landscapes. So I live in Milton Keynes. I'm surrounded by green spaces. Right outside my bedroom window is a field with sheep and like cows and stuff. On holidays, we've been traveling throughout the UK, like going up to the Peak District, to the Cotswolds. I feel like I'm on an island again and I'm getting that experience of getting different landscape. And that's one of the reasons why I love it here.
See, the funny thing, I'm laughing to myself here because I'm a Londoner through and through. You know what I mean, mate? Do you know what I mean? And when I think of Milton Keynes, I mean, I had family that moved there maybe 30 years ago. And for me, Milton Keynes felt very much like that Edward Scissorhand place. Like everything really? Looked the same. What? Yep. Roundabouts, highways. It just didn't feel like the UK that I was familiar with. So yeah. It's interesting that for you, you don't see that in Milton Keynes.
No, because there's so, I mean, I really appreciate green space and there's so much of it. There's like little rivers that you can walk along the embankments and see the little fields with sheep grazing. And maybe it's nice to me because it's novel, because I've only been living here for 3 years, because it's so new that I'm like, oh, wow, this is amazing. And for you, you grew up here. So maybe you just took it for granted and were like, oh, just another field with cows.
I suppose lots of British people do take for granted the fact that they've got all of this landscape around them. You kind of stay in your city, you know, like New Jersey, people just get familiar, they get comfortable, they stick to the norm. That is something that you definitely don't do. You obviously like to try new things, but I guess you do take things for granted when you're living in one place.
I think so, because I feel like when I've asked Black Londoners, I know, like, have you been to the Peak District or the Cotswolds? The answer is most likely no. It amazes me because you live in this beautiful country, but you never really take advantage of it and go and see the sights. But I guess you just take it for granted. I'm sure there are beautiful places in New Jersey. I don't know of any because, you know, you just live there. So you go to work, you go to school, you go home. So you travel outside of where you're comfortable to explore.
Why did you travel outside of the US? Because whilst you say you moved to US as a child, you were there for some time, right?
Yeah, so I guess I moved there at 17. So that's not really, I guess I wasn't that young, but I felt very young at the time. Growing up as a child, I loved to read and I've read books set in different countries and I've always wanted to see the countries. And it just became something that, like a burning desire. I remember when I was younger, I read this book called Sphinx by Robin Cook and it was set in Egypt. And after reading that book, Egypt became the first country on the list of countries that I wanted to visit. And I was fortunate enough to visit. I did a study abroad program there for spring break when I was in the university. And that just ignited a travel bug. After I did that, I just wanted to see it all. Just to explore other cultures, other languages, other food. I've always believed that it's not right to die where you were born. There's a whole world out there to explore. So just like, why box yourself into to just one place? Just go see it all.
Did America offer you that diversity in terms of meeting people from different places? Or do you find that you've got that more in the UK?
So America, definitely. I found out once I moved there, a lot of my friends were from other countries. And for some reason, we kind of just met each other and just gravitated towards each other. But I find that overall the culture in America, like once you move there from another country, there's kind of this expectation to assimilate and to become American. So almost immediately I lost my Jamaican accent and I started to speak with more of an American accent. And you just start to just assimilate more into the American culture. Funny enough, I moved to the UK and my Jamaican accent came back.
I can hear it.
Yeah, a lot of people now say that I sound more Jamaican than American. And I feel like people that I've met here from other countries, they hold on more to where they're from than becoming British. So people are still like, I have a lot of friends who are from Nigeria and Ghana. And they might have been born here and their families are from Nigeria and Ghana, but they still have a strong sense of where their culture is. And the food is still being prepared in the house, like the Nigerian food, and they still speak their different languages. Whereas that wasn't my experience in the US. Like people just assimilated quicker there.
I definitely found the same thing, but I do feel like there's a bit of a shift, you know, with all of these genealogy and tracing ancestry and stuff like that. You know, my husband is African-American, his parents, African-American, his grandparents, African-American, his great-grandparents, you know, so he doesn't know culturally anywhere else, you know, apart from what's revealed in his genealogy test. But do you think that in general, Black Americans just are really happy and comfortable with claiming being Black American? Or do you think that there is this desire now to try and find out where their ancestors' ancestors are from?
I see there's a movement. So I'm a part of a lot of social media travel groups on Facebook, on Instagram, and I see where there is a movement where people are definitely trying to find out their ancestry, whether it's through the genealogy test or traveling to Africa and just seeing like what countries resonate with them. But again, that's something recent. When I moved to America, that was, what, 1999? So the culture was probably different back then. I mean, I can't speak for African Americans back then, because I think when I moved, I was just trying to survive and just figure out what to do in this big space. Yeah, so for me, it was just, okay, now I have to be American.
So you've touched on it already. Is it easier to be your authentic self in the UK?
My experience, me personally, yes, definitely. So my husband is Jamaican British. And a lot of our friends are Jamaican. And I was surprised to come to London and go to Brixton Market and see breadfruit and banana and yam and all those. I have a closer connection to the UK being a Jamaican than I do to the US. I mean, a lot of our streets in Jamaica, a lot of our towns, a lot of our culture is heavily influenced by the UK. And you see it here. And it feels more home to me here than the US did. And I do feel like I can be more Jamaican here.
What do you think the US has given you or gave you that maybe Jamaica didn't, and maybe has given you an advantage in the UK?
Resilience, opportunity. That's one thing I say lacking in the UK is the opportunity for Black people. So I didn't just move to America by myself. Like a lot of my high school friends were all moved around at the same time and go to school there as well. And I see how they have climbed their career ladders, how they've progressed in their careers. I don't see that kind of progression here in the UK. Across companies or companies within my industry, I don't see a lot of Black leadership, which I see in the US, in the education sector, HBCUs. I don't see that in the UK. So I feel like in America, what has America given me? I guess a strong sense of pride in being Black and being a part of a community that's willing to fight and uplift each other. Whereas here in the UK, yeah, we can be our authentic selves, but I don't feel like the community is, I guess, unified with everybody being Jamaican here and Nigerian there and Ghanaian there. Like we're all little pockets of Black people within the UK, but we're not big one community.
I've always wondered about that because I hail from Ghana. That's where my parents are from and my majority of my family. And I love to celebrate the differences in Black communities in the UK. So my mom's best friend is Grenadian, one of my best friends Jamaican. You know, that everyone's from everywhere and I love the differences and I love that we can really celebrate that. At the same time, I think that maybe the separation can cause unnecessary challenges where we don't all work together the way that we could or should, or I don't even know whether everyone has that desire. And that's just my observation. I might be speaking completely out of turn, but I do admire the way that when it comes to Black issues, for the most part, there are small subcultures of, you know, African-American people who are on the fringe and they're not trying to assimilate or be part of a wider Black community. In fact, they want to hold their identity quite strong. But I think it's admirable the way they come together. I've never really understood. Can you tell me about the sororities and stuff like that? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Oh, gosh. I wish I could. So I was not involved in any sororities and I don't understand that culture, to be honest. See, this is the thing, like as much as I'm American, I feel like that's an African-American culture that I never assimilated that much, I guess. I can admire it. Like I said, they have this brotherhood and this sisterhood that they all that come together collectively as a people that I don't see here in the UK.
So I have a 10-year-old daughter and I know that you're a mother yourself. My daughter's currently in the UK, but I'm really interested about your journey into motherhood.
I'll start with why I moved to the UK. So my husband was already living here when we met. Lies. I met him when we were kids in Jamaica.
Okay.
So he actually lived next door to my best friend when we were growing up. And then I moved to the US and he moved to England. And the same friend like connected us a few years ago. And I came to visit once. We started to date long distance. And then whirlwind romance, got married, and I moved over. Right before I moved over, though, I was diagnosed with endometriosis. And having had surgery, the doctor said, you know, it might be difficult to conceive. So just keep that in mind as you're getting married, that, you know, you should probably try to start having kids right away. And when I came over, I discussed that with my doctors here, and they immediately referred me to IVF, which was shocking. I had looked into IVF in the US before I moved over, just to kind of get an idea of what the process involved and the cost. And it, of course, it was expensive. So I moved over to the UK and the doctor said, yeah, you know, with your history of endometriosis, I will refer you to a fertility specialist and I would recommend that you go straight to IVF. And shock of my life, once I saw the fertility specialist, found out that IVF was free in the UK, which, you know, in America, when it comes to anything medical, medical and free don't go together in
the same sentence,
right? Much less IVF. So we took advantage of that. And for people, so I've actually talked about my IVF journey on my YouTube channel and people came from it in the comments like, look, the NHS is not free. It's taxpayers and... Okay, so I work and we pay taxes. My husband pays taxes. So it's a benefit of citizens of the country and taxpayers that this service was here and we were able to conceive our child through IVF.
That's a marvelous thing. It's a bit saddening though that people came for you in that way when they knew nothing about your journey or your contributions to the UK. You know, I just learned recently on a podcast interview from Orlando, thanks Orlando, that actually when you become a British citizen, you do pay an amount for health.
Yeah, it's not even when you become a citizen. When you apply, so I think I did a spouse visa and whenever you have to renew the visa two or three times. And every time you renew the visa, you have to pay like this lump sum towards healthcare. And it was quite expensive. I think it was like £500 in addition to contributing to the NHS through my salary. So I pay my NHS and my taxes contributions, and then I pay another £500. So yeah, so it's not like I'm here taking advantage of what the government has to offer, like I'm paying into it. But I think it's the way I put the information out there on YouTube. Like I was very much excited and I guess in admiration that there's this service available here in the UK that I was just like, wow, healthcare here is free and IVF is free. And I probably should have said it's free at the point of service, meaning when you go to the doctor, you don't have to pay a copay and you won't get a bill. But it's not free because you're obviously contributing towards it through taxes.
Sure, sure. Tell me a little bit about how much it would have been in the US, because I know you did your research.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, that was so many years ago. But what I do remember is that it's dependent on how much coverage you get through your insurance. So some insurance would pay like 50% of the cost. Some would pay up to 90%. But a lot of them I've found is common that they'd pay for the procedure, but not for the medication. And the medication alone can run up to $8,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the cost of actually having, you know, going through labor, having your baby, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And even before you get there, so there's a procedure for IVF, there's a cost of medicine, and then there's also the cost of all the blood testing that's involved and ultrasounds that's involved. So it can become quite expensive. And then, yeah, to have a baby in the US, I don't even know what that costs anymore, but I know that there are copays involved. And there's a bill at the end of the delivery service that you get in the mail after the baby is born, right?
That doesn't make any sense to me. That's unbelievable.
And that's what blows my mind about the NHS, that it's such a great service. Like I've had two surgeries, IVF. My pregnancy was very complicated. I ended up having a C-section. And at the end of the day, I didn't have a bill. I had to see hematology after giving birth for other complications, no bill.
We have this conversation ongoingly, you know, the differences between the health service in the UK and the US. A former guest also said, that the hospitals are archaic, they're old school, they're not as nice. Listen, what do you think?
It's not a perfect system. That's something I had to get used to when I moved here, to be honest. That was one of the things that drove me nuts when I moved here. I registered with a GP and I wanted to make an appointment. And she's like, okay, we'll send you an appointment in the mail. And I was just like, what? What do you mean you send me an appointment? So you literally call to make an appointment and then they'll send you a letter with your appointment through the mail, through the actual snail mail. And I'm like, it just blew my mind. Like, I had to sit and wait for weeks and weeks to get an appointment in the mail. And yeah, the hospitals, some of them, I mean, they can use a little bit of modernization. When I gave birth, I had to stay in the hospital for 7 days. And I was on the ward with maybe 20 other women. So it's not like in the US where you get your own room and it's like this nice hotel style hospital room. No, you're on a ward and you have to share this giant room with, okay, maybe 10 other women. But at the end of the day, you might not have that luxury, that comfort, but you're getting quality healthcare and it's not breaking the bank.
Yeah, I remember having a water birth and having to book this, you know, birthing suite well in advance, right? But it was competitive. So whilst it was free, it was, look, if it's available, of course, if you're in the right physical state to have a water birth. And I know of friends who really wanted a water birth and booked for it, but it was busy on the day and they couldn't get in. So their whole birthing plan, their dream of entering motherhood was completely shifted because it was dictated to them. And I'm thinking, well, if you're paying for it, you're going to know sort of what you're going to get.
So it's not that NHS is the only option here. You can get private healthcare. I have private insurance as well through my company, and I have gone to a private hospital. One of my surgery was through a private hospital here. But again, even through private, it's so much cheaper than anything I've had to pay for in the US at the same level of quality in terms of your own room and nice services.
Let's talk about money and a little bit about the work that you do. So you work, your day job is in pharmaceuticals, and it's an industry that's known for some decent pay packages. Is it an American company or a British company?
Yeah, so I work for one of the top five big pharma. It's an American company, and I started my career with them in the US. So when I got married, I transferred me over to the UK. And through that, I got to see what the range of salaries from project management is in the US versus the UK. And I actually wrote, let me find it.
I'm ready to learn. I've got my pen and paper ready. Come on.
So I've actually Googled to get some information and kind of compared it to other competitors in our industry. So in the US, the average salary for pharmaceutical project management is between $93,000 and $123,000 per year.
Wow.
In the UK, that's $45,000 per year.
No way.
That's average. Yeah. So that was something that was shocking to me when I moved over to think, because I mean, I always thought of England of somewhere having higher cost of living. We know real estate here is way more expensive than some of the places I'm used to in the US. Taxes are probably a little bit more as well. So I would think that the salaries would kind of match that higher cost of living, but it's not the case.
How has that impacted your lifestyle? Because that was one of the considerations that my husband and I had when we were doing this, pros and cons and, you know, where we're going to live if we move it to the UK and London prices, what you were getting on real estate or property was just, there was no comparison. You know, what you would get for a 2-bed flat in London was a 4-bedroom house where I am in, you know, yeah, Henderson, Nevada. And it's like, the math isn't really adding up. And then you've got to look for a job that, you know, where you don't have a large commute, because travel, whilst we can get around, is not cheap.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for me, thankfully, my company transferred me over, so I didn't have to deal with too much of a shift in salary. But in terms of like buying a house, I think that's why a lot of people move outside of London. So in Essex, things were much more expensive than where we are now in Milton Keynes. Thankfully, we're able to move over because of my husband's job. I don't know how, but somehow it all equals out in terms of how much your salary is versus your living expenses. I feel like I live very comfortably here still as I would in the US. The only thing I have to sacrifice on, I think, is space. So the house is expensive, but it's small. You have to struggle with trying to find space for all your things. I think that's the biggest sacrifice, not having the kind of property that you say you would be used to in the US. So you just have to change your lifestyle. Don't shop as much, right? I think there's a culture in America to just shop, shop, shop. I mean, you watch TV, there's just constant advertisements. Come out, there's a sale here, the sale at Macy's, shop, 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 spend your money. Yeah, I mean, I lived there for however many years I did, and I accumulated a lot of stuff. And when I moved here, the day I moved here, I had eight suitcases with me. And that doesn't include all the things I brought over on previous trips. So I'd come over to visit and I'd bring stuff over and I'd bring stuff over. And the day I moved over, I had eight suitcases. Imagine having to check in eight suitcases, how much that cost me. And they were all overweight.
No way.
And I just had so many things that I couldn't understand, or I couldn't grasp the concept of just leaving them behind. All these shoes and clothes. Oh my God, it was too much. But there's just this mindset and this culture of just accumulating the best of the best. You watch a TV, an infomercial, and you feel like you have to buy that product. And then once you have it, you just don't want to let go of it. So it gets packed into one of my eight bags and it made its way over to the UK. And then there's nowhere to put it. Because we live in a two-bedroom flat in Brentwood, which fortunately had closets, like proper closets. Not walk-in closets, because I'm yet to see a walk-in closet in the UK. So it had a closet, but there was just nowhere to store stuff. And at that point, you realize you just have to let go of it. And gradually, over the course of the next couple of years, I just lost that connection to things. I started to have, I guess, more experiences with traveling. And it's just, I guess it's the culture here. You just don't have that connection with things and that need to just constantly shop.
I had a meltdown the other day. We were going out and I didn't have anything to wear. And I think, especially after COVID, I wasn't going anywhere. And being in a long distance relationship, you know, again, it was more about buying flights than it was buying clothes. So I saved my money in that way. But one thing I did really feel in my chest was not being able to go down the road to my sister's house. I've got two sisters, all three of us are same size shoes, and we can wear each other's clothes. And I burst into tears. I said to my husband, I just want to be able to go to my sister's house and pick up some clothes and stuff. And I think that's how we got around it, not having so much stuff, as was sharing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know whether the US has that community of sharers in the same way.
So I have two sisters as well. And I find that we were very possessive of our things and we never shared. And we used to fight. Literally used to have like World War II because somebody borrowed somebody's shoes.
Okay, so we are similar but different. I love that.
I mean, but now when I go home, I'm like packing half my stuff to give them because I don't need it anymore.
Yeah, sure.
Now it's just, I don't need all this stuff. You just learn to be content with life. You don't need stuff and labels. Oh my God, I used to be addicted to labels. And it's ironic because now I live close to Bicester Village and I go there all the time and I have access to all the labels, to the Burberry and the Fendi, and it just doesn't have that same appeal anymore. And I don't know if that is that living abroad or is that growth because I'm now a mom or something. I don't know, but something changed.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But how did you end up in the US? If you had an option for your husband to come here, how did you end up there?
So we really thought about where would we live in the UK. And whilst I love London, I love the diversity, I love the fact that I got my family friends around, I love the transport. I never thought I'd say that I loved British transport until I got here and realised how important it is. And then we just started looking at the jobs market. And my husband works in a very specific industry. He works in power and power generation. And again, we did that comparison, that salary comparison. And we were like, whoa, that's like a 50% reduction. And fundamentally, we'd have to move anyway. There was no way we could live where I was living. We would have to move on the outskirts. And when I looked at where I would be moving to, I love Bristol. Bristol was probably, you know, it was the top of the list for me. But Bristol was far from my family and friends. Whilst I have a small community of friends in Bristol, I thought, why are we doing this? We're forcing England. And as you said earlier, you know, why die in the place you were born in? There's so many places to explore. Las Vegas, entertainment, gaming. I was thinking for my daughter, she's into art, she's into gaming. Tech in America is just phenomenal. I could see her climbing up the ladder if she was to pursue that kind of career over here. You know, it was just so free ranging, lots of things to do, lots of people coming in and out. And I don't know, you know, I'm maybe in 5 years, 10 years, I might go, maybe I haven't made the right decision, but I was looking forward to getting off the small island.
And I know you and I spoke before and I said it's almost like our experiences are kind of like mirrored each other. So I felt that way in New Jersey, like everything had to be planned and everything was just too busy and I needed to get away from that. And I found that peace here in the UK. Maybe if I lived in London, I wouldn't feel that way. Maybe I would still feel busy and confined. But because I live out in Milton Keynes across from a field, I feel like I do have that better quality of life where I can just reset at the end of the day or can reset on the weekends and I don't feel too busy all the time, and which I always felt in the US. I'm constantly going back and forth like whether or not I should move back. I have a son and living in Milton Keynes, one of the downsides, I feel like he was in nursery and he was the only black boy in his nursery. And I felt like I didn't want to do that to him. I want him to grow up around diversity. I never want for him to be the only black child in his playgroup. So that's one of the reasons why I thought, you know what, maybe I'd go back to the US so that he can be around black people. And, you know, yeah, just to have family, just to be around family, because it's difficult being in a country by yourself and not having grandparents and aunties and uncles and cousins. Yeah. So that's one of the reasons too. I was thinking, I've been here 8 years, maybe it's time to pack it up and move on.
We've definitely got parallels because, you know, as I said, my daughter's in the UK and a lot of her family are there. She's got family here and they're dotted around the place. But for me, it's like an opportunity, an adventure to explore, to go to different places. And I definitely want her to feel like the world is hers.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel that in the UK. Whilst, you know, we had the privilege of being able to travel with our maroon passport, which is now black apparently, or navy blue, I don't know, I still got the old school one. I think there's a confidence that comes with being associated to America. And I don't know whether it's the resilience that you build or the freedom to be black and be part of blackness that is succeeding elsewhere. But yeah, I don't know if my daughter was a boy, or, you know, if I had a son, would my consideration be different? I don't know. Whereas I don't think I had to think about so many layers with her being a girl. I think when I see all the news and, you know, reports about the way that black men are treated in America, it is worrying. So in the UK, I would never have to worry about my partner going and leaving the house. It just wouldn't cross my mind. But I found the minute I got here, I was really worried for my husband's safety. I'd be like, drive safely. Oh, or if he has a little bit of attitude or whatever, I'm like, no, come on, temper that tone, because you don't know who you're going to run into.
And that's the thing here too. I mean, that's the thing about moving back. Like, I feel like I have to bring him back so he can be with family and kind of build his pride as a black man. But the minute he becomes a teenager, then I need to get him out to safety, to somewhere that's safe. But I wanted to touch on something you said about travel. So one of the things I love about living here and something that I want to expose my son to, which is a reason why I would consider staying, is the travel. So living in the UK, like, I've been to almost everywhere in Europe, because before the pandemic, obviously, it was so cheap to just go to Italy and France and wherever. So is that something you did with your daughter that you would miss out on now living in the US?
Well, I don't know whether I'd miss out on, but my daughter is, you know, very fortunate in the fact she's been to so many places. And I definitely took advantage of it while she was younger. So when she was two, by the age of two, she'd been to Ghana like twice. And I just thought, right, taxes are cheap to travel with an infant. Let's go. Let's do this. she's got a list of places that she wants to visit in America. The first place she wants to go to is Hawaii. And I'm like, yes, I'm now in a position to be able to take her to Hawaii or Mexico. You know, she loves Barbados. She loves Jamaica. We're close to the Caribbean. Yeah, so she can revisit those places and, of course, see a bit more of America. So I don't know whether she would miss out, because that's something that you and I share in common, a passion for travel.
Yeah, that's a good perspective. So yeah, so I felt like I have to stay here so that we could travel Europe. But you're right. When you live in America, you can travel the Caribbean. I could go home to Jamaica more often and visit the other islands. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I haven't thought about it that way. People always ask, is it better as a Black person to live in the US or the UK? I have no idea. I think it's the best thing for a Black person to do is to just get up and travel. Go live somewhere else. Go have an experience somewhere else. Don't resign yourself to stay in that box where you were born or where you grew up. Just have a different experience, whether that's the US, the UK, somewhere in Europe, somewhere in Africa. I think it's key to just get out there and travel and see what your experience is or can be as a Black person somewhere else.
And when are you coming back to America? What's holding you back?
I don't know.
What's really, really holding you back?
What's really holding me back here? I'm at peace here. I mean, I think if I find the right place to live in the US where I can feel the freedoms I have here. Like, for instance, I've been living here 8 years and I've never been pulled over by the police here. And I live maybe 3 streets down from the police station. I don't even think I can count on one hand how many times I've seen a police car in the past 3 years. I feel safe here.
Have you been pulled over by the police in the US?
Girl, I've been arrested in the US. I've been arrested for calling the police in the US. I was in a situation where I felt unsafe and I called the police for help. And they came in and they just arrested everyone, including me, who was hiding in a corner and crying. And I got handcuffed, put in the back of a police car, taken to the police station, fingerprinted, everything. And I'm like, hello, I called you for help. That was around maybe a few months after I'd moved from Jamaica to the US. So I didn't even know anything about the police situation in the US. You know, I just knew that if you need help, you call the police. And that's what I did.
Sure.
And it turned out to be a very traumatizing experience.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, I got pulled over by the police in the UK and it's so true. I didn't feel scared. I was a bit confused, like, why are you pulling me over? I think they pulled me over because I had my music really loud and I was driving a pretty decent car and I had this bright blonde hair and I was jamming. I was jamming, but my engagement with them was quite polite. They were just like, do you know why we pulled you over? I was like, no, I don't. And they were like, we ran your plates and your MOT is out. And I was a little bit shocked because I was thinking, why did you feel the need to run my plates? Did I look like someone who'd stolen this car? I don't know. I think that's the thing that I find in the UK, that you're always second guessing your experience with people who aren't Black.
Do you feel that the police, do you find them to be intimidating? Like, were they trying to intimidate you and make you feel unsafe or unwelcomed?
In that experience, no. But if I go back to when I was around your age, when you had your experience with the police, my first real encounter, I was an adolescent. I was coming back from college with my friends and we were all wearing matching tracksuits because that's just what you did when you were a teenager. You know, everything was like you wanted to feel part of a group. So we were all wearing these matching Adidas tracksuits with the 3 stripes down the legs. And we had our hoods up because it was cold and it was dusk. It was, you know, it was early evening. And 2 police cars pulled up and stopped us and told us to remove our hoodies and asked us where we're going, where we're coming from. And I had a friend who had older male family members who had experience with the police. So she had a hostile attitude straight away. Like, you can't ask me, don't touch me. I was like, oh my gosh, what is going on right about now? And then they tried to justify the reason for the stop by saying that there was an incident nearby and we matched the description. I was so stunned and confused as to what was going on. I didn't understand what was happening. In the end, they let us go and my friend was furious. And I was angry because she was angry, but I didn't really comprehend what had happened, but the fact is we were a group of black young people walking with our hoods up, so we therefore looked suspicious.
Yeah, I got that a lot in the US. So the one experience I've had of being pulled over, I wasn't driving. My husband's an engineer, and he had taken home, I forgot what they call them, a concept car or something. But the car doesn't look like a normal car. Like, it has all kinds of wires coming out of it. It looks suspicious. It looks like a driving bomb. And I just knew where we were in Brentwood. I just knew the minute we left the house that we were going to get stopped, and we got stopped. And being from the US and having those experiences with the police when they stop you, it's so much more intimidating. Like, you don't even feel furious or angry. You feel afraid. So I immediately kind of felt afraid, like, oh my God, what's about to happen? But they were so polite. They came over and said, they called him sir, which I've never heard. I've never heard in the US, like, oh, sir, mister. Oh, they were just polite. And I was just in shock, like, how different, I guess, the experience was between here and in the US. But yeah, I mean, I think as a black person, irrespective of where you are, you're always going to have that second thought, like, is this happening to me because I'm black?
Unless you're in a predominantly black country, because certain things never cross my mind when I'm in Jamaica or Trinidad or, you know, Ghana or wherever. They just don't cross my mind whatsoever. And I do miss that experience.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But then you get stopped in Jamaica and it's just like, oh, is it because I'm a tourist? You're trying to get my money because you think I have money because I'm from foreign. Yeah. You can't win, right? When it comes to the police. God.
You can't win. We're winning, but you can't win at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
So tell me, what's a must-have in your suitcase when you're coming from the US to the UK? What do you bring back?
Oh, man, there's loads. Alfredo sauce.
Oh, that's that's your salad dressing, right?
No, that's the pasta. It's pasta sauce. Yeah, it's white pasta sauce, but I haven't been able to find it here. And in the US, we have really fine spaghetti called Angel here.
Okay.
And I haven't been able to find it here. I love pasta. Back in the day, you know, I used to take back makeup, hair products. I couldn't find hair products for black hair and makeup to match my complexion. But that was because I was looking in Brentwood and not in London. So when I went home, yeah, I used to bring stuff like that back. But yeah, I can't think of anything else.
So what do you take to the US from the UK in your suitcase?
Chocolates. My sisters love the chocolates here. Yeah.
Chocolate is so much better. I keep telling people this. They don't believe me. Like, my husband thinks that Hershey's chocolate is the way forward. I'm like, you don't know about Cadbury's flake.
So the Cadbury's is better, yeah. So everybody wants chocolates when I go home and tea.
And tea, yeah. That's becoming universal, I think. Everyone loves the tea.
Yeah. So my mom and Marks and Spencer's, for some reason, Jamaican Americans love anything from Marks and Spencer's.
They do. So if it's not Harrods, it's Marks and Spencer's.
But yeah, even my husband's family, they want like Knickers from Marks and Spencer.
Do you know? That's so funny. My mom's coming next week and she asked me, what do you want? And I said, can you get me a pack of M&S Knickers?
Yes, I went into M&S and I'm like, what's the difference? Is there something I'm missing?
There is a massive difference in the Knickers, which are called panties over here. There's something about panties that just sounds a little bit seedy to me. Knickers sounds ladylike. And there is a difference. So I bought some Knickers and I guess you can't really compare Target to M&S, but everyone goes to Target. So I thought, hideous. Sorry, Target, but hideous. I wouldn't even wear them on my lady's time. I'm just like, no, thank
really?
You.
Wow.
No, thank you. They're diabolical. So Knickers are on their way to me and I'm very happy about that. Well, I've enjoyed our conversation and I feel like we have to stay connected because we are living parallel lives. And I'd love to hear how you're getting on and, you know, tell other people who are interested in your story how to connect with you.
So I, during the pandemic, I finally started the blog. I should have started when I first moved here. So I have a blog and a YouTube channel under Girl Not Afraid. And the blog is girlnotafraid.com. And I'm also on Instagram under the same Girl Not Afraid.
Amazing, Shireen. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for your time and your stories.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Shared so many personal things. Knickers. What?
Oh my gosh.
A good way to sum up this conversation with Shireen Walker is that my spirit recognizes her journey and so much of what she shared. Her sense of worldly wonder and commitment to personal discovery is deep. It's really got me pondering on the meaning of Black identity worldwide. And whilst she didn't have an answer as to where the grass is greener for Black people, she did remind me of the global possibilities and potential for Black people if they dare to try. I mean, feel the fear and do it anyway, right? Go check out girlnotafraid.com. To share your experience of being Black in the UK versus the US, email us directly at americandreamerspodcast@gmail.com. And please rate and review American Dreamers on Apple Podcasts. It's the best way for people to find this podcast. Special thanks to Aura Studios, our assistant producer, Brianna Jovan, and editor, David Devereaux. Stay in touch with me on the socials throughout the week at Claire Clottie.